Chapter 9. The monitor set into the surface of the imitation rosewood desk was angled so that only the man who sat there could see the screen, and he had not looked away from it since the incident report on the Sulaco had come in. He intended to review the file, text, and video until he had memorized every written word and every second of footage. This was something he'd done before, whenever shit happened. Shit always happened, but in all his years as an officer, shit like this had never happened on his watch. Not in peacetime, anyway. He had been in the Colonial Marines for his entire adult life, but even before he had enlisted, most people had assumed he was military. As a child, his bearing gave people the impression that he was a student at a military prep school. Recently, he had overheard a civilian ask his secretary, Sergeant Feng Mei, what his first name was. "Colonel," Sergeant Feng had replied archly. Colonel Pasquale Vincenzo Rossetti had showed his appreciation by putting her in for promotion to Master Sergeant on the officer track, despite knowing he'd lose her to officer candidate school before the year was out. That was simply how things went. You never got to keep the good right arm. By contrast, dumb shit stuck to you worse than Martian goosegrass. Certainly, he could take pride in knowing that the installation at Anchor Point was 100% dumb shit free. No mean feat. It had taken a great deal of care and attention, along with a little horse trading with COs at other space stations. But it had been worth the effort to have personnel he could count on. They didn't have a lot of experience, but that only meant they had fewer bad habits to unlearn. Rossetti made sure they stayed in peak condition, body and mind, partly because peacetime wasn't a permanent state, but mostly because a complete lack of morons provided no protection against the vagaries of chance, as in dumb bad luck, e.g. what had happened on the Sulaco. Corporal Uzoma Neng's written account was clearer than any of the body cam videos. Rossetti had never heard of such a foobar on a space station, and worse, it had come right after Corporal Hicks's debrief. While the incident on LV-426 had occurred 4 years earlier, that wasn't really a whole lot of time out there, where distances could put travelers in cold sleep for 8 weeks or 8 months, sometimes more. Rossetti had seen plenty in his nearly 40 years with the Marines, and some of it had been awful enough that it still made him shudder. But this gave him a bad feeling like he hadn't had since the Sector 7 war. That had been the longest, most fucked-up bug hunt on record, run by a committee of the dumbest dumb shit since the legendary Three Stooges. The only good thing about it had been the change in regulations limiting the distance between personnel and their commanding officer. Anyone giving orders now had to do it in person. While the Sulaco events hadn't been nearly as disastrous, they had been bad enough. Neng was still hospitalized, undergoing post-trauma rehab along with the other surviving Marines and civilians. Most of Rossetti's generation had been treated by practitioners of the suck-it-up, tough-it-out school of therapy. But after watching the first third of Neng's video, Rossetti had sent mental health sick leave approvals to the hospital before the doc in the box had the chance to request them. Sergeant Fong's coded knock at the door jarred him out of his thoughts. 1, 2, 3, pause, then a much quicker 1, 2, which meant someone had arrived, sans appointment, and was too important to throw out. She came in at a near run, smart and professional as always in her dress blues, but looking apologetic as she held out her large red plastic envelope. "Susan Wells and Kevin Fox from Military Sciences," she apologized. He grunted in acknowledgement, using his index finger to scrawl his signature on the envelope before he dumped the contents out onto his desk. "Weapons Division," she added ruefully. He glared down at the two photo IDs and a three-sheet printout labeled Agenda. In his experience, an agenda was usually a to-do list he was expected to have finished the day before he'd received it, a trick no one had tried to pull on him since he'd made colonel. One of the privileges of rank was the sharp decrease in communiques from entitled bureaucrats. Unfortunately, the Weapons Division shitheads could slip through any filter. "Send him in," he growled. A violent encounter with an alien species, followed by a visit from a Mili-Sci power couple, weaponized Barbie and Ken. The timing indicated they must have been on the way to Anchor Point even before the Sulaco had strayed into UPP space. A retired four-star general had once told him that no matter how unusual, unlikely, or unexpected something might be, somebody somewhere had seen it coming. "Colonel Rossetti, I'm Kevin Fox." The smiling man holding out his hand looked exactly like his photo, overly tanned with yellow gold hair and teeth that were too white and even. Classic Weyland-Yutani stock, overconfident, overtrained, overpaid, and now over here. Rossetti suppressed the urge to twist his hand until it broke off his arm. Fox stepped aside to let Barbie take his place. "Susan Wells," she said, and offered her hand exactly as Fox had. Rossetti didn't break her hand off either. "Welcome to Anchor Point," he said flatly. They sat down in the chairs on the other side of the desk without waiting to be invited. "I have to tell you, Colonel, we're impressed," Fox said with official company heartiness. "I mean that, truly. Susan and I could not be more impressed, and we're not the only ones." "I'm sure the videos don't convey the actual scale, do they?" Wells enthused. "We're particularly impressed with your handling of the situation," Fox went on. "The situation so far, that is. And, of course, we're really impressed with your cooperation." Shit. Fox was another ex-mouthpiece from newscasting. The vocal cadence was unmistakable. The company pulled half their PR staff from all news channels, and this one sounded like he'd fallen off the anchor desk yesterday. Wells had probably come out of teaching, so they complimented each other. Company Ken gave the headlines, and Company Barbie filled in the details. Human resources engineering at its finest. "That's absolutely true," Wells was saying. "We couldn't get a single thing done without the cooperation of good people like yourself, Colonel." Rossetti realized he was still holding their ID cards. They were ridiculously complete, giving blood type, fingerprints, retina scans, even genomes. He tossed them down on the desk.
"Around here we call that following orders," he said, stone-faced.
"Yes, it certainly would simplify things if everyone had your attitude."
Wells's smile was practically blinding, especially the civilians who boarded the Sulaco with your men. She shifted position, leaning forward a little.
"Pardon my frankness, but I think there's a very real possibility of serious problems there."
"It's not just a feeling, Colonel," Fox added. Rossetti suppressed the urge to laugh. Alpha male Ken couldn't resist taking the conversation away from Barbie. "We've been going over psych profiles, and the picture couldn't be any more clear." "Clearer," Rossetti corrected him silently.
"Anchor Point has a population that's quite, oh, call it variegated," he went on while Wells nodded her emphatic agreement, "which is only to be expected considering how many different fields are represented here. But it also seems to attract people of a certain type." He paused and made an exaggerated, thinking hard face. Let's call them idealists." Rossetti gave a short, humorless laugh.
"Or liberals."
Wells's perfect face puckered slightly with concern.
"This has nothing to do with politics, Colonel. It's just that we've noticed a certain antipathy to the company's military sciences. Among a good percentage of highly placed civilians, there's a definite lack of sympathy for the goals of weapons division."
"Anchor Point is under the Colonial Administration Authority," Rossetti said before Fox could tag in again. "This isn't a military operation. We don't run things here. Interfering with a civilian government could be a violation of the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty. Our remit is to solve problems, not create them."
Damn it!
The newsreader's speech pattern was contagious. Rossetti wanted to wash Fox's mouth out with soap.
"All of which looks damned good on paper," Fox told him with approval so intense that Rossetti could practically feel the man patting his head.
"But it doesn't always work very well in reality. We want all the civilians who boarded the Sulaco sewn up tight. Very tight."
Rossetti's eyebrows went up.
"How do you suggest we do that?"
"Forfeiture of shares, for starters,"
Wells replied, looking pleased that he'd asked.
The threat of forfeiture's the one sure way to get their attention. Tell them anyone who talks will lose their shares immediately. No appeal. We've found this approach quite effective in the past. But that's a simple matter. Fox took a small flexi from his inside jacket pocket and passed it to him. This isn't. The Sulaco logged a 3-person boarding party during its time in the UPP sector. Rossetti wasn't surprised. He had imagined UPP teams swarming over the Sulaco like locusts, frantically streaming all the data they could get within 2 hours. Nor was he surprised that Fox and Wells had gotten hold of the Sulaco's incident log before he'd seen it himself. But Fox's rubbing his nose in it pissed him off. Instead of punching him, Rossetti said, "Why wasn't I informed when you obtained this information?" "We're informing you right now," Wells told him brightly. "We're also informing you that you seem to have lost an android, or artificial person, which I believe is currently their preferred term. This one was a Bishop model. To be more precise, you've lost only half of the artificial person, but its upper half, the one with the brain. So it might as well be the whole thing." Rossetti set his face in an impassive mask while he considered his next move. Sending Marines into the UPP's apparatchik utopia to reclaim stolen property was out of the question. The UPP was a collective of wannabe Bolsheviks who thought misquoting Karl Marx made them socialists. They were amateurs, lacking the Marines' training or focus, not to mention hardware. On the face of it, the Marines could eat them for lunch without working up a sweat. But any group whose members put their ideology above their own lives were extremely dangerous. A lot of good Marines could get maimed or worse before the amateurs either ran out of ammunition or changed their minds about their lives vis-a-vis their ideology. To Rossetti, that didn't justify losing a single life on either side, especially not in peacetime. His gaze fell on the desktop screen where his calendar popped up a reminder for yet another meeting, scheduled to begin as soon as these two stereotypes could put up a privacy bubble in Conference Room 8B. Because in Millie Psi Weapons Division, nothing, not even life itself, progressed before there was a meeting to discuss it. No doubt this was how he would die, Rossetti thought. Not in a blaze of combat glory, nor quietly in his sleep, but in a meeting where his heart would give out from bureaucratic tedium. He might not even fall off the chair, just faceplant on a conference table. Come Judgment Day, he'd need a nose job.